Hello everyone, welcome back to the Run Strong podcast with me, Gary House. This episode is with George Foster, who's a friend of mine who recently ran the second ever fastest Bob Graham. For those of you that don't know, the fastest was Kilian Jornet a couple of years ago, but George's run beat Billy Bland's time, which has stood, I think Billy Bland's time was 13:53, and that stood since 1982. So that was the fastest British time. George now holds the fastest British time in 13:44. So he's took almost 10 minutes off that record. Kilian is still the fastest, was 12:52, which George is keen to push. He still ran the second fastest time. And typical kind of humble fashion of a fell runner, George plays it down a little bit. And he is quite humble about the whole thing. But the truth is, he's a world-class runner. He's had world-class results over in the US, which we cover. He's actually not been doing too many long-distance races, as in of this distance, the Bob Graham. He specialises in like the classic fell races. So his name is probably pretty well-known in the fell running scene, but not in the wider community. It was a bit of a surprise to some people. Not to me, though, because luckily we've met before. We've kind of got the same coach and we're both at Team Varga. So I managed to leverage that and get George onto the podcast. It was a great interviewing George. But if you're after just Bob Graham stats and inch by inch kind of coverage of the Bob Graham, apologies, it got to about 40 minutes before I even touched on the Bob Graham. So if you want to learn more about his background, his role as a teacher, and the mental health side of things, then yeah, this episode will be for you. George had to shoot off to some bloke called Paul Turney's birthday drink, I think. So yeah, I left it a little bit late talking about the Bob, but George was really generous with his time, and hopefully he will be bringing back his blog pretty soon. Here is our episode. If you want to know more from George or myself, send us a message. Again, I'll put those in the notes. Thanks for everyone that left a review about the last episode with Toby. I know Toby's had lots of personal messages as well on Instagram, so thanks for the positive feedback on that. If you have enjoyed Toby's episode or this episode, please make sure you leave a rating and a review on iTunes. It'll help get the word out. Okay, that's enough from me. Here's George.
If it looks like I'm in bed, it's because I'm in bed. I'm not in bed, I'm on bed.
On bed, yeah. Hard day, is it? We have got George Foster, who is now known as the second fastest ever Bob Graham holder. George, aren't you, mate?
Yeah, apparently, yeah. There's a few things going around, but that's one of the things I've heard.
Yeah, well, I can confirm, looking at the list, that you are the second fastest.
despite what people might want to think.
Yeah, and I'm sure, like, I've already had questions from my group about the Bob Graham, which, like, I've got a little bit of an insight to. I ran with Beth, and we've got the same coach in Martin, so I am going to ask you about the Bob, but I want to start a bit earlier than that, if that's okay. Running career-wise, I want to hear about what running was like for you when you were younger, when you were a kid. Did you come to the sport already as a decent runner? Were you naturally gifted? Were you good at high school? Have you always been a runner? Just start from there for us.
Okay. I got into like organised running at primary school, so I did the 800 meters. That was like the longest we could go. I wasn't a sprinter, so I think I just got chucked into the 800 meters because, you know, I had a lot of energy. I used to run around a lot, obviously, at break times, all that sort of stuff. So it was just as organised running went, it was the 800 meters at primary school, and then obviously nothing really came of that because you're just dicking about and when you're like 10 years old. And then high school, nothing major, like. I think I got county level for cross country, and that was about it. I remember going to I think it might have even been national schools 400 meters, or that sort of level, I think it was.
Yeah.
And I was dead last in the 400 meters, like by a long way. Yeah. Dead last.
I remember doing the 400 myself. I did the 400 because that was almost like the cool thing to do. If you couldn't sprint, 400 meters was like, oh, that's long distance, isn't it? And I got my ass handed to me by all the, what you'd say, the geeky kids and stuff. I was like, oh, this is wrong. This is,
yeah.
It's like, you saw 400 meters and 800 meters is like a long distance then, didn't you?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And it was like, yeah, running against lads with like track spikes and all that sort of stuff. And, even back when you're 16-year-old wearing your like vest tops and all that sort of stuff, and they were blade handing it around this 400 meter thing. And I was just, goofing about really when you look at it. So that was pretty embarrassing. So I realised then that I wasn't really a sprinter. The cross-country thing, obviously, at school there as well, kind of came in a bit more and enjoyed running. Used to go up to Scotland quite a bit on like school holidays. And that, my mum's from the West Coast. So we used to go up there and just like run about in the hills and just kind of have fun as a kid without any racing or anything like that. Certainly when I went to uni, I'd sacked off running pretty much entirely, just did rock climbing, just got well into rock climbing then.
Yeah.
And kind of focused, channeled most of my energy or all my energy into that. There was a hill race, I was in uni up in Stirling up in Scotland.
Right, yeah.
And there was a hill race, went up this, just one of the hills out the back called Damaya. It's only, it's a 35-minute race, pretty much 40-minute race, up and back. I remember doing that just every year. So it was a 4-year course, did that every year for the course. And then didn't really take it much further than that, just the rock climbing and the university life kind of took over quite a bit.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't really until lived down Langdale, worked at the old Dungeon Gill, and one of the chefs there, this guy Bob, is a pig farmer from Yorkshire, cooking the food in the back, and he was well into just going out and just say he's got two gears, he's either not moving or he's moving super fast.
Yeah.
And that was his two ways of getting around basically. And just rides this big steel bike, just goes on crazy bike rides. And we decided to do the old County Tops, just to run around the old County Tops, which is 36, 37 mile or something.
I thought you were going to say on a bike then, on a steel bike.
No, just running.
Yeah, go on.
Just running around it. But I'd never done 36, 37 miles of anything, I don't think, even cycling before that. And so we just, we ran around it, took us about 11 hours or so, goes over the three highest peaks in the old counties that now make up Cumbria, so Lancashire, Cumberland, Westmorland, so Helvellyn, Scafell and Coniston Old Man.
Yeah.
In a loop starting from Langdale, so dead easy, logistics-wise. Ran around that and just thought, this is ace. And then entered a fell race not too long after that. Langdale Horseshoe was the first fell race in a proper, aside from these ones at uni, in, when was that, October of 2011. And just from there, really, just kind of got more and more into it. Joined the army, so got more into me running, less into me climbing in the army.
What age were you when you joined the army?
26, 25, 26.
Yeah.
I was quite fit by then. And I remember getting told that I was too old to join the infantry, which is what I wanted to go into. I went through Sandhurst now, so I did the officer route.
Yeah.
And got told I was too old to join the infantry because I wouldn't be fit enough. Yeah. I was just like, okay. felt pretty fit,
And how as crazy it turned is out, that, like, being told that when you know you're a fit guy or whatever?
I know, especially when you're 25 and getting told you're over the hill.
Yeah.
If not, but, that's how it is. And, and probably 5 or 6 years after that, I might not have been as fit. But, that's 10 years later now and I feel quite fit from where my running's gone.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was kind of 2017 I got involved with Martin Cox. So I spoke to a really good mate of mine called Chris Sterling. About coaching. He was a triathlete.
Yeah.
And said, who would you recommend? And recommended Martin. And since mid-2017 till now, it's been like on all systems go pretty much for training and just seeing massive, massive improvement with him. So it's been really, really good for me.
And back when you were going back to the cross country, when you're kicking off out doing that, was it more of a way to get out of school, or were you more into team sports, or did you enjoy it and know you were half good at it?
Yeah, it was probably, I knew I enjoyed running. I always had that sort of thing right from primary school that I just enjoyed the individual sport of running. But I really didn't like competitions back then. I didn't like racing.
Yeah, okay.
So we had school cross country. I'd always come second or third in school cross country behind these two lads that were always naturally, but they'd been training for longer. They'd been into it and carried it through right from primary school all the way through doing the 800 metres, 1500 metres, all that sort of stuff. So they were always much better, but it was just good to be, sometimes I'd beat one of them sometimes I think maybe once I beat both of them, but that was it. And then, it was just a way of just being out and kind of testing yourself. And I played rugby and football and that at school, as you kind of like forced to do a bit. I wasn't too bad at them. I didn't like relying on other people to be good. I didn't like, and likewise, I didn't want to be the weak link either. So at least with running, it's individual, isn't it? You're as good as you are. And if you're not, then it's down to you, isn't it?
And there's like a little bit of realization, there was with me anyway. I was playing football and all these team sports, and everyone I played with they were quite talented. So I was in some quite good teams and stuff, but I was the most average player you could ever think of, really. But then when you start running once you're in your 20s and stuff, now your sport is almost choosing you, isn't it? Rather than you trying to choose your sport.
Yeah.
I'd have loved to have been a Premier League footballer maybe, but not. But then you, quite quickly you realise you're not going to be. You realise you're not going to be a sprinter. But actually, when you start seeing progression in the running, I remember thinking, well, I can almost like prove myself a bit at this bit because it's just me and I'm making progress. I'm not just tagging on to everyone's success almost. That's what drew me to it originally, I think.
That's exactly the same with me. Like, I really enjoy progression. I like racing and I mean, everyone's got an ego, so everyone likes to place well in a race, I would imagine. There's probably very, very, very few people that could honestly say that they couldn't care less where they came in a race.
Yeah.
If you win it, then it makes you feel good at the very least. Mm. And if you then use that to brag to other people or big yourself up, then that's your prerogative. But it shows progression. Winning a race showed, for me, it shows progression. It's a very linear sort of way of showing that. If you've done one race 1 year and you've come 50th and you do the same race next year and you come 25th and so on, then you are seeing progression. And that's the biggest thing for me. That's what I've always got or wanted to get from running, is if I can see myself improving, self-improvement, whoever that is in terms of fitness or racecraft or whatever, then that's all that motivates me and bothers me really in that sort of sense.
And did you think kind of, I always think when you're in a race, because I didn't know I was as competitive as I am until the first time you almost beat someone in the last like couple of hundred metres or last kilometre. And you could be talking like middle of the pack, like 50th position or 100th position or something. I think you almost get the same like physical response from finishing 50th instead of 51st to first to second. And it's the same as I spoke to someone about this in like football. Like if you score a goal in the Premier League and you see them charging off, celebrating. But then I remember doing exactly the same thing in Sunday League kind of thing. So it's the same response. And in fell running especially, like you've got, like we haven't got a big scene around here, like crazily in like North Wales, but when you're in with the same people and it's the same races year on year, you're right, you can see the progression because you're turning up, and whether you're in the top 10 or 50th to 60th or near the back, you're still competing, you're in the age group and it's the same people around you.
Definitely. Yeah.
So it keeps it honest, doesn't it? It's, you can't really, if you put the work in, then you will see progression.
Exactly right. What's easy to forget is that everyone has been in those positions as well, where you are scrapping for 101st, or where you are scrapping for 50th or whatever. It doesn't matter. That's probably the beauty of fell running, really, is that there isn't that elitism. I know it gets panned around quite a bit.
Yeah,
talk about that, but it is genuinely true. You might get one or two egos in fell running as you get in any sort of sport or anything, but that elitism is just not there. It's not that sort of sport, and it just gets stamped out. You know, hopefully it does anyway.
And it can't be, can it? Because you'll always get done by someone just choosing a different line, or
you'll
fall flat on your face or something. There's too many variables for it to be like that. I think
it's really important to have that humility and just think, like, again, one of the probably the better bits of advice, or the better things I was told when I first got into running, was like, there's always someone faster than you. So there's no point just sitting on your laurels and, you know, and thinking you're the absolute dog's bollocks because you've won some race or whatever in Lakes or in Yorkshire. You know, someone will come along and they will run faster than you the next time round, or the next race round. You know, so just it keeps you honest, like you say. You know, you just
or they won't hang around at a checkpoint as long. When you're, because like you touched on that you weren't that competitive to begin with, do you think, like, when you join the army, because I imagine that's quite a competitive kind of environment, even though you're all working together to a point, but was that a competitive environment that you took into running, or was it, or what did that set you up for in the running?
I think the competitive element in running came kind of parallel to that. I think for me, it was just the confidence that I was getting better, so therefore I could enjoy races because I knew I wouldn't be last.
Yeah.
Like the last. And I think that was probably like a subconscious sort of thing. So I think the army developed a bit of confidence as well, which then probably led into wanting to be competitive. But I mean, the army it's a horrible kind of competition, especially at Sandhurst.
Yeah.
That the officer school there. It's just, I really didn't like it. That was probably the worst year of the army, was that first year. I didn't enjoy myself at all. It was just, you get split into thirds. You get top third cadets, middle third cadets, and bottom third cadets. And generally, if you're bottom third, it means you're rubbish. Top third, it means you're in good. Middle third means you're kind of just pretty average. But
yeah,
it doesn't necessarily come down to your ability as an officer or as a leader. It's more just your personality. And if you're one of the bolshy ones that shouts and, you know, and pulls funny faces, well, not funny as in ha-ha funny, but pulls the right face at the right time to make it look like you're working out or whatever, even though you're not grafting at all, then you'll be in the top third because your personality fits it, not because you're actually all that good necessarily. I mean, obviously there were people that were very good.
Yeah.
And it was just that sort of thing. You're just playing this game to try and get into it. So I really shied away from that sort of thing. And I didn't have a very good time at Sandhurst. But then after that, once you get to your unit, it's a totally different playing field. It's like you're just one of the officers there. So it's competitive, yeah, but much more the sort of teamwork element and pulling together. And I think maybe that helped in a subtle way with the running, because I didn't want to be the weak link.
Yeah.
And as the officer, when you go to, I was in a couple of units that were pretty pretty full on. So you feel like you need to prove yourself even more. You don't want to be the person that lets them down, because everyone's looking at this new officer coming in, is going to be there 2 or 3 years and then move on somewhere else as being, you know, just some guy just to fill some shoes for 3 years and then move on. Kind of want to add a bit of value. So I think it was just that fear of being a weak link, really, that kind of makes you get better in all aspects.
Did you enjoy making an impact rather than just coasting? Because like now you're teaching now, aren't you? So you've gone from the army to teaching. Do you think part of that is the making the impact part of it?
I've always wanted to like that whole service thing I've been quite into, just giving something back to in a grand way of putting it, to the army, giving something back to the country, teaching definitely to the community, you know, and hoping that you are making some sort of a difference. That'd be quite nice, definitely. I teach over in like the wild west coast of Cumbria, so it's a certainly compared to the Lake District, which is, you know, people think of Cumbria, they think of the Lake District probably first before they think of somewhere like Whitehaven or Workington or Eglinton or all those places on the West Coast. So, it's a deprived sort of area. It's very community-focused area as well. So if you didn't grow up and live in Whitehaven or Workington or whatever, then you're treated with a bit of suspicion straight up, I think, which is fair enough. In a way, but it gets this reputation of being kind of narrow-minded, closed-minded. And so it's, yeah, compared to the Lake District, definitely, or the Eastern part of Cumbria, it's quite rough and ready. So, hopefully kind of broadening the horizons of the people that live and work there. Not that they're all closed-minded or narrow-minded. No. Not meaning to suggest that, but it's just quite an isolated part of the county, an isolated part of the of England. So, it's just trying to help in the communities. Kind of all.
It's a bit like it sounds like I speak about this in my own group, right? So a lot of people almost don't know why they're running and things like this, but a lot of it is just to have some kind of purpose. Like if you take away someone's purpose, like people talk about mental health and depression and things a lot now. And I think we're at a stage where if you give someone just some purpose, that helps massively. And I'm not an expert on that, but kind of, I think when you're teaching and when you go from the army, definitely into teaching, you can have like that impact on people, and that, whether it be from your experiences in the army, whether you've been leading through your running and things like that. Do you find that people are open to you being a leader, or did you have to earn your stripes being there, kind of thing, because you were an outsider, even though you're only just from over the hills?
In teaching, you mean?
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing you've just got to remember as being a teacher, I think, I got a really good bit of advice during teacher training. I've got loads of bits of advice, but one that really sticks in my head is like, just when you see the kids in the morning, just smile at them and say hello, because you could be the first person that's done that.
Yeah.
That, or you could be the only person who does that all day as well.
Yeah.
They're coming potentially from home environments that aren't, you know, conducive to a happy childhood. So even just a smile and saying, oh, good morning, such and such, how's your day been so far, or what lessons you got, you know, just having a crack with them. And that could make the biggest difference to their whole day, their whole week, potentially, which is a really sad sort of thing to think about, actually. But
yeah.
But if you can be that positive influence on them, even if it's just for that 5 minutes you see them, or just walking past them in the corridor or whatever, then that's a great thing. And I think that's just at the heart of all sort of leadership, I guess. It's just having that personal relationship with someone and just, you know, treating them like a person, because that's what people want. They want that, the basic dignity of being treated like a normal person, don't they?
Well, you could go in there. This is how I see my own coaching. Like a lot of the time, everyone just needs an arm around them sometimes, or someone to tell them that they're doing well. And it's okay to tell them that. And they're okay to just receive it, kind of thing. Not all like you don't have to go in there all guns blazing with any achievements and everything, do you?
No.
Like you say, you could fix what they're feeling with a smile or whatever. Because I always think using my own running experiences, that's what helps me in my coaching. So I'm assuming the running helps you way more in your teaching, maybe. Just through life experience more than anything.
Yeah, yeah. It gives you perspective on stuff, doesn't it, I think?
Yeah.
Which is important, yeah. And I guess there must be lessons in everything that you can take into all walks of life, isn't it? But, like lessons from running in any sort of job, that perseverance, the overcoming stuff and, you know, cracking on, you know, it all helps with all sorts of stuff, you know.
So going into when you were in the army, did you get a chance to race much? I know I'm jumping around, but were you racing in the army, or did you have to wait until you'd left the army?
No, I raced right from the start, pretty much. Yeah. Just doing luckily running is a big thing in the army. I did a lot of cross country, like inter-unit cross country.
Yeah.
The wider regiment I was in was the artillery, and then there's subunits within that. So we had unit cross country, and then you had inter-unit cross country, so artillery against engineers, against infantry, against whoever. And then eventually I got into the army team to race against like the Navy and the RAF and all that sort of stuff. I left that a little bit late to kind of focus in on that running side of things with the army, because I left not long after I got into the army team. But again, like the units I was in were just, we were quite busy, so it, it, you kind of you fit it around everything else that you're trying to do.
Yeah, okay.
But I need to be able to race quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was good.
What was the first fell race that you entered or did? Go back to that, and then what was the first fell race where, like, you knew that you were pretty good at this?
Oh, so yeah, the first fell race was at Langdale Horseshoe.
Yeah. Did you think you were okay then, or did you think, oh?
No, I remember I ran around it with like earphones in, like big rugby socks on, and just like a proper novice, you know. And do you know Dave Makin? Have you ever heard of Dave Makin?
No.
He's an ad bugger. He runs for Achille Ratty.
Yeah.
One of the they've got a couple of huts. They've got a hut in Wales. They've got a hut in in North Wales. They've got a hut in Langdale, and they're kind of a climbing and fell running club.
Yeah.
And he used to come down to the Old Dungeon Go quite a bit when he was on club runs. It was like their informal sort of meeting house, just down the valley from their club hut. And he was the one that told me to kind of go around it. And I kind of started running around with him a bit. And he gave me a right bollock and grabbed me earphones. Yeah, I got the right knob. But so that was my first race. And I think, I don't know, the first one where I thought I could be decent. I remember Wasdale Horseshoe 2016 or 2015. I think I was third. Really, really, really bad weather. Like probably the worst racing conditions I've ever run in. Just like sideways wind and rain and that. And I remember catching up with Paul Tierney and Ben Abdonor at coming off Great Gable, running around Stayed Tarn, back on over towards Scafell, and just thinking, oh, you know, I'm feeling good. I've caught them and they're lagging a bit, and I'm pressed on past Escors to Scafell, and I'd gapped them quite a bit, and I was like, oh, I feel like I'm going pretty well there, because, you know, they're kind of like the names in fell running, or some of the names in fell running them too. And then coming off Scafell with Scoffer, ended up coming in third, and just thought, oh, you know, that's not a bad result at a race like Wasdale in those sort of conditions. The time was terrible. It's never going to bother like Billy Bland's time and that. But it was just placing quite high in such a prestigious race as that.
Were you happy with the third, or were you almost disappointed? Or
no, I was over the moon with third. Yeah. Definitely, yeah. I don't think I can't remember who won it. I think maybe Neil Talbot came first, and I can't remember who was second now, but. Yeah, I wasn't that close to him. A couple of minutes away, at least. But just the fact to come, you know, like get a podium, get like I think it was a £10 voucher off Joss Naylor.
Was it?
Yeah, kind of makes up for it, doesn't it? So yeah, it's good. It's a good little run.
So going from, because you've gone from fell running, and you're quite kind of, because you've raced a lot in Europe as well. So travel's obviously a big thing. Was that part of your rock climbing, or was it part of the running that took you kind of wanted to go and explore?
It was a rock climbing first. Yeah, we used to go to like northern Spain, Catalonia quite a bit, and climbing the limestone cliffs there at like Sirana, Magaluf.
Magaluf?
Yeah. No, no.
I've done some climbing Magaluf. There.
Magaluf, yeah, no. Climbing the bar at Magaluf. I don't know if I've been to Magaluf. Yeah.
No, it's too late anyway. Now, mate. Definitely missed that boat.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Mid-30s, you're over it now, aren't you? You're one of creepy guys in the corner.
Yeah.
And then like the Alps as well. And so doing some of the higher mountain stuff in the Alps. And then when we got into running, kind of combined the two. So I haven't been back to northern Spain since going to running, I don't think. But like my wife does a lot of rock climbing to a high level, so we kind of combine summer holidays now, where we used to before the obvious happened. But we used to combine sort of summer holidays with going away to the Alps and Switzerland, and doing climbing and running there, and just kind of entered a couple of races. Did Sierra Zinal, 2014, I think it was. Had an absolute shocker, but you know, it's quite a hard race. I used to just kind of do that, just use it as a like holiday racing rather than training specifically for them, or focusing specifically for them anyway.
So who is who's the better rock climber and who's the better runner out of you and your wife?
Oh, it's like chalk and cheese. She's 100% better at rock climbing than me.
Yeah.
We used to be about the same level before I joined the army, and then that's my excuse.
Yeah.
had protecting the country to focus on rather than
I always think from my little knowledge, they're just a lot calmer and better problem solvers and things like this when it comes to the rock climbing. Guys are just chucking themselves around. I know not at the higher level, but I remember trying to get into it myself and just coming away battered, where the girls were just like nice and graceful and thinking about what they were doing.
Yeah, those stereotypes are pretty true. Certainly when you just get into it.
Yeah. Oh God, yeah.
And then the running side, yeah, she runs. She's got some shoes. I managed to get some shoes, but does it every now and then. She really can't be asked for that, I don't think.
No.
Which is fair enough.
I think running's different. Like, I'm like Charlotte, my wife, she won't mind me saying, she's got no interest in running. No interest at all. Got lots of other interests, but I always kind of think if both of you are manic about running, I think it must be crazy sometimes.
You're quite a special thing, yeah.
She
appreciates the fact that I like it, but I mean, if you ask her to come along to watch you run cross country, she'd run the other way. That's the only time she would start running, is to piss off the other way.
And boring. Like, go in Europe, but outside of Europe, I know, like, I followed you racing in America last year. Kind of briefly, tell us how that was, because you did basically sky running out there, wasn't it?
Yeah, so again, going back to my friend Chris Sterling, he ran for Northern Ireland one time at the World Mountain Running Championships, and it was in a place called Pikes Peak. America's Mountain, they call it. It's a big old beast, but there's like a marathon goes up and down it, where you can just do the ascent, which is obviously just going to the top and then you get a bus down. He planted the seed, and I saw he died a couple of years back, or 18 months back, or so, and I just kind of thought, I quite fancy going over to go and do that, and just to kind of run the same route that he did, because he was a really good mate, and just to kind of, as lame as it sounds, sort of pay a bit of a homage to him, I guess, and just kind of go and run that route. So I went over there. It's in Colorado, and it's 4,200 meters or so at its highest point. And you just go and run up Pikes Peak, the ascent. They asked me what my marathon time was to kind of rank you in terms of when you set off, and I'd never run a
marathon
before. So I just kind of guessed and said about 3 hours, whatever, and that put me in the second wave. And then I realised, I spoke to Martin, he was like, no, you're faster than that. So I tried to ring around the organiser, tried to find the organiser, standard sort of, not standard American, but the race organiser committee weren't the most flexible with changing that round. So I got stuck in the second wave, and then just came sixth overall, I think, but I was passing people in the first wave after 2 or 3 minutes, and it's just a ball ache trying to run up this single track all the way to the top, trying to pass the 70 people that are in front of you, when, to be honest, 60 of them shouldn't have been in that first wave anyway, because they were just hacking on about being faster than they were, which is annoying. I missed out on a bit of money as well, which is, when you're skint trying to travel around the US, it's about putting to have a bit of money.
Yeah, they've got some prize money there, haven't they? Yeah.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they don't mess about with it, which is quite nice. But it was a great race, and I'd definitely go back and do it. Really, really cool. I got to meet some of the top American runners, Joe Graves, super sound, really nice guy, and some others that are there as well. So, it was cool. Raced in Colorado, and then a week after that, went over to Montana and did the sky race out there called the Rut. Like a 50k, a 28k, and I think a 12k, and I did the 28k, which is really brutal course. Really hard. Again, like, the mountain's a good 4,000 meter mountain, or maybe 3,500 meter or something, but you know, high enough, and you're kind of running up through this old kind of a summer ski area, so all these kind of ski lift pass areas and all that sort of stuff. And the ground, once you get onto the main peak, Lone Peak, I think it's called, It's just like running on like massive dinner plates of kind of granite slate type stuff. So really hard running, really sharp, tough rock. And yeah, it was really, really good lap. Probably the best racing I've ever done in terms of organization, just good fun. Like they have a VK on the Friday, you've got your 28K on the Saturday and then the 50Ks on the Sunday. And they've got all these different categories. You can have categories for running in cut-off jeans, like jean shorts or jorts, they call them. When you get to the top of the highest point on Lone Peak, in all races, I think it was all races, they offered you, if you wanted to stop, they'd give you a mohawk. you get a free tattoo at the end if you want it of some deer antlers. The prize, I managed to come second in it. It was a long way behind first, but I managed to come second in it and got like a big wrestling belt. And then I think it was a decent chunk of money, but it was all in $1 bills. So it's like wedge proper wads of money. It was a really good crack actually. Just a really good atmosphere around it. So if, you know, people want to go and race in the States, there's two races I'd definitely recommend. Yeah. Pikes Peak's a bit more serious and the Rut's just a really good crack.
Yeah. Do you think that was because I remember seeing those results, and I'll be honest, when I saw like and you finished second the week after, I thought like George must be pretty fit here, kind of thing. Like, did you feel that way? Because there's decent, like it's quite a good field that they have there as well, isn't it? So were you confident going into it? Like, I know you kind of misplaced yourself with the marathon time, but you're not to know, are you? To be honest, were you confident to be competitive going into it, or was it just a holiday run kind of thing?
No, I'd spent, because I just finished my teacher training, so I think we finished that in mid-June or the first week in June, and I went straight out to Europe after that. So the second week in June or the third week in June, I was out in Europe. So I'd been in Europe for 6 weeks at altitude, just training. I did a few races out there as well, some uphill only races and things like that. I had some good results out in like France and Switzerland. So I was confident in being able to run well within myself.
Mm.
I was out in the States, but the beauty of going out to the States, I didn't have a clue who anyone was. So
yeah,
we were just kind of you didn't see a name on a start list and think, oh shit, I'm not faster than him or should be faster than him or whatever. I didn't have a clue who they were. So it was just kind of running a bit blind in that sort of sense.
Plus, they wouldn't have known who you are either.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
yeah,
I assume so anyway.
Oh no. No, I mean, no one let on if they did. So it was good for that, definitely, yeah. Certainly for the Rut race, I mean, I'd heard of people like Joe Gray.
Yeah.
For the Pikes Peak one, so I knew he was going to be there or thereabouts, you know, and he won the world long distance later on that year. So, the short distance search and what was even the long distance one, but anyway he was the world champion in mountain running that year, so I knew I wasn't going to be beating him, but for the Rut, I didn't have a clue who they were. The lad that won it is a Salomon athlete in the US, and I didn't have a clue who he was, but I certainly know who he is now because he's absolutely rapid. But
and with the so like that kind of course, either hard uphill kind of tempo kind of, or like 30-odd K, lots of elevation. Is that the kind of course that you enjoy, or that you think you're good at, or is it what you enjoy the most?
I think for me, it's come from both. I enjoy it probably more because I feel like I'm better at those sorts of courses.
Mm.
I think having that cross-country sort of background rather than a strict fell background from when I was really young has lent itself to being, to preferring them faster, more runnable courses.
Yeah.
So sort of that's probably why I enjoy going out to Europe in the summers rather than staying and doing the fell races, just because I prefer that sort of the faster trail running.
And is that what gave you the kind of, because going into the Bob, like we better talk about the Bob Graham a little bit. Like, is that what made you think I can run a fast Bob Graham when you're getting results like that, and you kind of realise, because the Bob Graham, there's lots of runnable bits. And like looking at it as a fan of the sport, it's like it was begging for someone rapid to have a really good go at it. Was that your thinking that you can make up some time in the runnable bits?
I think so, yeah. That's a really good point. I think that not being as fell focused probably played into my hands a bit more. I know obviously the Bob Graham is a runs on trails. But if you see it now, and I first did it in 2015 or 2016, and even now in that 4 or 5 year period since, the trods have got you know, really marked now and much more obvious. So it is, in as far as sort of fell running goes, it's more of a trail run than a fell run, really. There's not, if you wreck it and you get a clear day, you don't need to get your map out much at all to nav it. You shouldn't really need to. I think that's just having that leg speed from the trail running. I was in Europe again for the summer just before, in like August, really, before starting back at school in September. I had a bit of leg speed, and I think that probably helps quite a bit. I remember doing the Old County Tops last year with Paul Tierney, and I hadn't run over like 20 miles for about 2 years, and it was just like the night before, his partner dropped out, and he was like, "Would you be keen to run that tomorrow morning?" I was like, "Yeah, go on, like, why not?" Had a few pieces, whatever, to fuel up for it, and then ran it, and found that I didn't struggle on it. Without sounding arrogant, I didn't struggle on it really at all. Felt full of running. Obviously fueled well and everything else comes with it. But we probably weren't running at my sort of limit then, because I'd got kind of trail fitness legs, faster turnover and more efficient at running over that ground. And it was Martin really that kind of, Martin Cox that pointed that out and said, you're probably just more efficient on that ground. And then that's, maybe, I suppose, planted the seed for the bob and just thinking, well, I think if you're trail fit or you've got fast turnover and you're used to running on the fells and what that means, then surely you can have a crack at a relatively fast time at the Bog Graham. So,
and people are gonna hate you for this, but like, I think I already know the answer. You didn't have a 6, 9, 12 month build up to the Bog Graham, did you? This wasn't your plan this year. So
not.
Like, tell us the races almost that you were planning to do, or what you were planning to do, and then tell us what like kind of timescales for the Bob Graham.
The season was, as we are well aware, was a total washout. it was never the plan to look at doing a round. I was thinking before we started chatting just like this evening, was like, I wouldn't be sat here talking to you about the Bob Graham, if it hadn't been for something like COVID coming along.
Yeah.
And we probably wouldn't be hearing about Best Round, earlier on, or Finley's Ramsey Round, or anything like those ones potentially, because it wouldn't have been on people's radars. We'd have been racing.
Yeah.
So back to questions. I went to the Alps in August. To go and run the Matterhorn Off Tracks mountain race, which is at 32K, I think. It's like the middle brother of the other Matterhorn Off Tracks races are out there. And I had quite a good run in that one, so finished second to this guy called Stefan Benck, who's one of the Scott international kind of athletes.
Yeah.
Really good runner.
See, the guy, he's won it a lot, or he's won it before.
Yeah, he's got the course record for it, and he wasn't far off this time around either. So he's a bit of a weapon when it comes to running.
Yeah.
On the course. So I was quite happy to. I think it was about 5 or 6 minutes away from him, so it was not setting the world on fire in that sort of sense, but wasn't too bad. And so that was all building towards the world long distance mountain running trials for the GB team that would have been sort of third weekend in September, place called Comrie in Perthshire.
Okay.
And then I think it was the second week or the first week of September that got binned. And then it was like, there's nothing else now till sort of April next year.
Yeah.
So.
And you didn't fancy running around a balcony for 12 hours or something? Dan?
Not so much. No. So had a bit of a quick chat with Martin, discussing options, and kind of agreed that we'd focus on maybe doing a fast road run at the start of the year next year, so February or March or something like that.
Mm.
And then I just thought, actually, I might just give the Bob Graham a go or something, just as like an aside, really, at the end of the conversation.
Because you'd already done some supporting this year, hadn't you? I know you'd done it a few years back, but you'd done some supporting as well, hadn't you?
Yeah, ran around with Kim Collison on his late 24-hour record. So I did a leg one with him, which was that was a decent, really decent pace for that first leg. And it's like 11 peaks in what essentially is the first leg of the Bob.
Okay, yeah.
The first leg of the Bob's 3 peaks, and you add on like an extra 7 or 8 or so on the 24-hour round. And we were going, I think Kim said that was about 15-hour pace.
Mm.
On that part, and it felt really quite comfortable carrying all of his food as well. And I thought, you know, that's maybe something to think about. And then just dismissed it. Helped Beth Pascal out on the groy leg of her record breaking round.
Yeah.
And again, that was sub 15-hour pace when she went around that, and that felt, obviously I was only doing leg 5, and it's only an hour and 45 minutes or whatever, hour and 50 minutes. So that obviously felt comfortable as well. But again, just packed it because I didn't, you know, had other things still going on at the time. And then when we got round to discussing it properly, it starts at Tenwood Mountain. I was thinking, you know, maybe a 15-hour pace will be good. I haven't lost fitness since running around with Beth and Kim, so maybe a 15-hour pace will be quite good. Start to train ready from there, from sort of mid September. Had a bit of a niggle from the Alps, from running in the Alps in August, so I had to rest for a week or so. It was really probably from the weekend that we would have been doing that mountain running trial, till doing the actual round on the 11th of October.
Five or 6 weeks? 6 weeks at push?
I think probably four, really.
Four
specifically, yeah. But you know, it's not like it was just off the couch type stuff. No. We'd love it worse, but it'd been building up through that year. Obviously, I hadn't been sat on my ass for 6 months beforehand.
And was it more just, right, I'm just going to look at lines and stuff like that, more than, like, you've got good course knowledge to a point anyway, haven't you? Looking at lines rather than looking at big days out on the course?
I did a bit of both. Like, I hadn't run for more than a few hours. I think the longest run I did was that T round back in May, which is about 5 hours or so.
Yeah.
So that was the longest run I'd had all year. So it was more like time on my feet, going around so I did the full round over 4 days, so 2 weekends of 2 days. So leg 1 and 2 on a Friday, and then 3, 4, 5 on a Saturday. Was the second weekend of wrecking it. And the first weekend was like leg 1 and 2, and then leg 3, and then leg 4 and 5 or something like that over 3 days. But mainly, yeah, that was just to check out lines and just work out the fastest ways that suited me the best for my run. I know there's people that have got various opinions, and
yeah,
you can argue till you're blue in the face about the best lines, but obviously you've got to find the best line for you, especially if you're going fast.
Yeah. When you were out doing the recces, were you then building a picture of a kind of target time to go for, or schedule to go for? Was the 15 hours then, were you then looking at reducing it? And how did you come to a schedule in the end?
Yeah, so went 15 hours for that first weekend. I looked around it and was quite confident I could get around it in that sort of time. And then on the second weekend, went with Jacob Adkin on leg 1 and 2, because he was going to be my support for that anyway. I'd already asked him by that stage. So we went around that. I didn't have a great time on going up Clough Head on leg 2. Just felt really knackered. But we still got round those 2 legs in about 5 hours or so, or just under 5 hours, which kind of puts you on to probably, I think it's about Billy's pace, really.
Yeah.
It's about 5 hours. And so it felt really good. Carrying all food and weight and that I wouldn't be carrying on the actual round itself. So that was a good confidence boost. And then the next day I went out by myself and did 3, 4, and 5 as a oneer in 8.5 hours, I think it was.
Mm.
8:36 sticks in my head for some reason. So that the cumulative time of those 2 days, it puts you at 13.5 hour pace.
Yeah.
Carrying again all weight, doing all my nav myself and all the food and everything for those 3 legs all in a oneer. So I had a whopper bag on. Relative to what you would normally carry.
Yeah,
yeah. I just thought, well, yeah, should probably look at backing myself and going a bit faster than 15 hours now then. So sent a message around to the support people, the ones I'd got for each leg, and saying revised timetable about 14 hours and 4 minutes, I think it was, for some whatever reason. I put it on for that, and then Paul Cornforth got in touch. He was going to do broad stand, stick a rope on broad stand for us, and he just kind of straight out asked, he was like, "Are you going to go faster than the schedule?" And I was like, "Yeah, you know, that was the first time I kind of mentioned it." I was like, "Oh, I think maybe I could go faster than Billy, whatever." And that's kind of the first time I'd said it to anyone. And it's kind of cat's out of the bag then, isn't it? You put that bit of pressure on yourself. I kept the schedule as 14 hours, 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Just so you have something, just it gives you that confidence boost when you're ahead rather than worrying about being behind all the time.
Remind me what Billy's time was. Can you remember? So
13:53.
Yeah, so... So you weren't far off it with your original schedule, but you knew that talking of broad stand, being for, like, as a climber, did you get roped or did you just skip up?
I got roped. Yeah, that's sketchy. I don't get what people mean by it. I did, because you did leg three, didn't you, with Beth?
I did leg three with Beth. I'd had a bit of an injury, so she drifted away by the time she got to that point, and Matt was with her. But it was always the plan. I just need to get to broad stand, basically. And then I dropped down, what's it called? Fox's Tarn, is it?
Yeah, yeah.
I went down and up, and she went on with Shane. Shane's a really confident climber. He didn't get roped. Beth got roped. So then, either way, like, to wait for me to get roped to go up, it doesn't make sense. They'd have already been gone, kind of thing. Just having two on support with her. So, I got lucky, to be honest. The first time I went up personally and had a look at that, wasn't on the Bob Graham or anything, but I turned back. It was a bit wet and stuff like that, and I was like, "God, if I do the Bob Graham, then that isn't what I thought it was."
People sell it like it's a piece of piss.
Yeah,
it's really not. It's sketchy as anything.
Yeah,
it was like being October. We had a really, really good day, but that bit was greasy.
Yeah,
and I just, you know, when you're how many hours in, you know, it was seven a bit by then, but, you know, if you're on a longer round and you're 10 or 11 hours in, and fucking, you know, going up that thing in fell shoes, no chance.
No.
Like, it's a one-way trip back down to the bottom, really, I think, on that thing.
Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, had a harness waiting for me, so stepped into the harness, still climbed it myself, but, had that safety rope, kind of, just in case.
So you've got your targets in mind before you start, and everyone in place to pace it. I imagine quite quickly, as soon as you're on leg one and leg two, like before the end of leg one, you kind of were you on pace, or were you ahead of schedule? Just tell us how it kind of went.
I was on schedule for leg one on my schedule, so I was on that 14-hour pace. I wanted to do that in 2:22. Mm. So I'm lying already. I was 2 minutes down on that one, or 2 minutes up even.
Mm.
So I got down throw curled in 2:20 rather than 2:22. So I was 2 minutes up, which was good. And then met up with Neil Talbot, Jacob Edkin carried on. So I had Billy Cartwright and Jacob Edkin on leg one with me.
Yeah,
and they were awesome. Just good crack and, you know, nice leg. It was kind of like a nice sort of, without sounding like a dick, that was kind of like a warm-up leg, you know.
Yeah.
Because obviously you know you're going to be running a decent lick, but you don't want to kind of overcook it right from the start, or should you just see yourself off. So we got under there, and it was like two minutes up was good. I hadn't told them I was going for Billy's time, but I had in my head that I was going for Billy's time. And then Billy stopped at leg one. Jacob carried on, met Neil Talbot for leg two. Jacob was feeling a bit under the weather by sort of Great Dodd, which is the second or third fell on leg two. So he turned around and sacked it. So just me and Neil Talbot, and Neil was mega on that one. I was kind of pushing a little bit without saying anything. I was kind of pushing a little bit, kind of a minute up, 2 minutes up, 3 minutes up here or there. And Neil was just like, it's great that you're feeling good, but you want to be feeling good in 10 hours time, let alone, you know, now. So, yeah. He was kind of like the voice of reason, which is exactly what I needed at that point, really.
Yeah.
So we still got down to Dunmail at the end of leg two. think it was 4:54 or something total, or something daft like that. So we'd gained about 5 or 6 minutes, maybe 10 minutes actually, overall on that leg. It was good for two. You know, it was good to be up on my schedule, but it was also bought me a bit of time to change my shoes out, and I was wearing some like three-quarter tights, some snazzy-looking three-quarter tights. So changing some shorts, changed
my
top.
Get the shorts on for the photos, quick.
changed t-shirt, changed shoes because my shoes were soaking wet. Met with Ben Abdelnour and Tom Simpson for leg three, and I think we ran that exactly the same time as Billy's one.
Yeah.
And it was always a plan to sort of make up time on leg three or be in with a shout at leg three and then make up the time on leg four and leg five and just kind of put the hammer down there. Because I know that he rested a bit longer on leg four. So I didn't want to do that.
He didn't change his tights though, did he? So
no, that is true. That is true. Leg three was just without incident, really. We just got through. Had a really good mate of mine called Liam Taylor on Broadstown with Corny. So they had some drinks and some food there as well. Ran down off Scafell with Corny and Tom Simpson. Ben had done what you'd done, but he had dropped down from Mickledore into Wasdale. So I think we got down there. We were bang on Billy's time, I think, for Wasdale, and then had a really, really good met up with Cal Tinian and Kim Collison on leg four. That was like the sort of the crux of the whole route, I think.
Yeah.
Is that leg four traditionally anyway. Had a really, really good climb up Eubarra, which is a steep bastard at the best of times, but a really good climb up it. And then just ate into Billy's time really. I think we were 12 minutes up on his time by getting to Honister.
Do you think knowing what you know, like if you look at someone, if you look at splits like that and you know that Billy stopped for like 10 plus minutes, nobody chooses to stop that long, do they? To be honest. So
no.
So if when you're pushing on for leg four, sure, like to me that would think, well, if I'd stopped for 10 plus minutes, then I might not be feeling good in leg four or great in leg four. So there's time to be had if I'm feeling good. Was that in your mind at the time?
Yeah, I mean, if I got anything right on that day, it was the food and the fueling.
Yeah.
So I never had a lull. There was a couple of times where I was a bit more relaxed than I should have been in terms of eating and drinking, but I got prompted by the guys I was with. Like all the paces on every single leg knew the score with food and hydration and that. So they would be prompting me if I had forgotten or if I hadn't eaten in 10 minutes or 20 minutes, whatever it was. So if I got anything right, it was eating and drinking on that. And the prompts I got from that. So I just didn't need to stop. It's not a case of like running scared, like I've seen in the past and people being afraid to stop.
Yeah.
I just didn't need to. So it was a case of like, well, just run through. There's no point sitting down for 10 minutes because everyone else has sat down for 10 minutes or 5 minutes or, you know, get a deck chair out of Wasdale because that's what everyone else has done.
Yeah.
Just, if you don't need to stop, then don't stop. If you do need to stop, then kind of do stop.
It's the time afterwards, isn't it? You know the going into leg four that, well, I would know that I'm stronger at this point because I haven't needed the rest kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a good confidence boost. And it showed going up Eubarra, climbed really, really strong on that. Had a bit of a dip going up towards sort of steeple and that, but, you know, you can't really run that sort of distance and not get a bit of a dip. But it wasn't a full-on bonk or anything like that.
No.
And then, it was just, you've got the confidence that you're moving well, and you also got the confidence that you've only got probably 4 or 5 hours left of running, and you'll be back home. So, managed to whiz through at Honister. Climb up Dale Head was good. Had a good crowd of lads out on that one, which is cool. And then it was just a case of, I think we were making time up on the tops, but lost a bit of time off Billy's splits on the road section, so I lost about a minute to him, which was a surprise about because I thought probably that, you know, the road would probably be a bit more to me liking.
Yeah.
But I suppose after a few miles in your legs, you know, everyone's going to turn to jelly on that bit. And ran into Mickle, and that was it.
At what point was the kind of, was the adrenaline going, thinking, like almost like knowing what time you were going to run? like how late in the day was it? Because I know, like, I know what you're saying in leg four and stuff, but it's still, you have to kind of almost suppress those thoughts, don't you? You kind of can't, you couldn't say it out loud, or like you say, 4 or 5 hours of running is still a lot of running. So when does the adrenaline kind of take over and you think, bloody hell, I'm gonna go under like the fastest UK time kind of thing?
I had an idea of when I wanted to be at each kind of crossover point, the end of each, or at each sort of road crossing. I had an idea of the time of day I wanted to be at after leg 1 to 2. I didn't really think about that one, but I wanted to be at Dunmail by 10 o'clock in the morning. I wanted to be at Wasdale by 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Mm. And I wanted to be at Honiston by 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So I'd know that when I set off at 5 in the morning, all I had to do was run the last leg in under 2 hours, pretty much. And I'd be under Billy's time. And we got to Honiston about maybe 5 to 5, something. And I was like, right, all I need to do now is just run this leg like I know I have a few times in 1 hour 55 I could have got away with. And I should be faster than Billy or whatever. But so that kind of, that was the first time I thought about it. And then it just got stressful.
I was going to say, did that give you pressure then? Because it's, the maths become a lot simpler, don't they? All of a sudden it's like, well, I've done this before. I know I can do this. The only thing I can do now is basically fuck it up.
exactly. Yeah. It's like, and like my legs were hurting. I was getting cramp in my calves right from kind of the end of leg 2, really.
Yeah.
So they weren't obviously getting any better. So running off Hindscarth towards Robinson, it's like the penultimate into the final fell top. And I was like, I need to do that short subsection in, I think it was like 12 minutes or 16 minutes or something like that. And I think I did it 2 minutes faster than I had planned. And I was like, right, from Robinson, it's an hour, exactly an hour, when I'm that tired to get back to Moot Hall. And I was like, I looked at my watch, I was like, oh, fuck. You know, I should do it. There's no reason I shouldn't do it.
Yeah. But
you know, my legs are tired. Anything can happen in that hour on the road and all that sort of stuff. And so it really wasn't until Portinscale, which is like a mile away from Keswick, that I thought, right, I've got under his time.
Yeah.
Now it's trying to make it as respectable as I can.
Yeah.
Not just like, you know, 12, 52, 59 or whatever. It's, you know, it's got to be hopefully in the 1340s rather than the 1350s.
Just a bit more respectable.
So I don't look, you know, like totally daft. Checked in at 1352.
And the there's a great photo of you at Moot Hall, and you've got your head in your hands. I'm assuming it's just like you feel overwhelmed a little bit. Is that what it was? Was it exhaustion? Was it just kind of, because, like, from what, remind us what your first Bob Graham time was.
2052.
All the way down to, tell us,
1344.
But at the same time, this hasn't been a 5-year journey goal to get to the Bob Graham fastest UK time, has it? So what's kind of going through your head when you realise that you've gone faster than Billy?
I think I was crying actually when that photo with me in my hands. I just felt really like overwhelmed by it.
Yeah.
Like just not the time. The time was great. Personal satisfaction. It was nice to kind of have done. I think I was always going to do another Bob because I got injured on that first one. I think I tore a muscle in my shin, and just basically had to go down every fell backwards from leg 2 onwards. It was crap. So it was just like there was that unfinished business, and I guess it was. So I was always going to do a Bob again. Never in my dreams I think I'd go under Billy's time, but once we got closer to it, I thought, you know, as we've discussed, that's an option that's probably quite realistic now, given where I am in my running. But really, it was just the fact that it was just such a great day. It's like a day. It was a realization that you're never going to get a day like that ever again.
Yeah.
Where just pretty much everything went as well as it could have gone, and I had some of the best support I've ever had. And you know, you've got like the European mountain running champion running leg 1 and 2 with you. You've got like an OM elite winner running leg 2 with you. You've got people that represent England running leg 1 and leg 5 with you. You've got people that represent GB, one juror, one Langdale won Wasdale on leg three with you and leg four with you, and you've got people that doing, you know, the 24-hour late record holder on leg four with you. It's like a really humbling experience to have these amazing runners giving up their entire day just to see you round this, you know, this 60-odd mile kind of round. It was just the emotion of sort of what a cool thing to be involved with, you know, yeah. To have all these people doing that just for you, just for your own sort of selfish endeavour. And like Ben Abdonough's partner, Britta, she drove round to Wasdale just, I didn't want to ask anyone on road support. She drove round to Wasdale just to provide road support for us.
Yeah.
With Lou Roberts, who came round as well. And having my wife and one of my friends come over to Dunmail and just give up part of their day to come and just change my shoes for me and like pull my socks off when my calves were cramping and give me a can of Coke. You know, it's that sort of...
It's a much different experience to a race as well, isn't it? Because those people, like you say, they're giving up the time and everything. And yes, like when you go to a race, there's the checkpoints and the volunteers and everything. But apart from a quick high and bye, there's not that interaction where it's like you've spent hours on the fells with them. Like they're invested in it, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
and it's... And I can imagine how much you should feel proud of like being able to do it, but also at the same time, like these guys and girls are coming out, so it's probably relief as well.
Kind of relief that you haven't let them down, relief that you haven't made a total tit of yourself, which is probably why I didn't tell anyone apart from those guys. So when I got to the end, it was just to support people.
Yeah.
And one or two other people that I know well, you know, friends from Keswick and that I just heard from the people that were involved. But aside from that, there must have been 10 or 12 people there. That was it. Maybe 15 people, and that was it. And all close mates or mates that have been on the run with me. So it was really nice. And I noticed myself getting a bit choked back in that from sort of Robinson. Obviously, you're really tired anyway, and that kind of plays a bit havoc with your emotions. But just realizing that, I mean, fucking hell, what an amazing day with some absolutely amazing people. So it was really just a privilege, really, to be running with them.
And do you think, like, having the races and everything and the things that you planned and put time and effort into taken away from you, like, will... it's probably a daft question, but will this leave you satisfied for this year, running wise, kind of thing, or where does it rank in running? Because I know you've had the big results in big races in the Fells, over in the States, and things like this. And this wasn't necessarily top priority at the time, but like, where does it rank now?
I mean, it's up there. It's up there more for the day. It's up there as one of those life experiences I probably look back on without sounding cheesy or corny or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
One of them days that maybe I look back on and I'll remember more than I will, you know, maybe coming third at Wasdale or third at Ennerdale or winning Larrigrue or any of those sort of races. Whatever. It would just be one of those days. It's a day that I'll never have again. So, you look back maybe when I'm 60 or 70 and just think, oh, that was the 11th of October 2020. You know, that was a really, really great day. And I won't remember the date of, you know, those other races necessarily. So, yeah, I think from a personal experience, it was great. The result, you know, flipping heck, I'd be a bit disingenuous if I said that I wasn't satisfied with it. You know, yeah. It's pretty nice to be able to cover that distance and that type of ground in that sort of time, definitely. But it's not above the experience of the day.
Yeah. And does it almost excite you now that, like, you know, potentially, or people would be daft, like you may get some fast people tapping you up to support them, kind of thing. Now that barrier has been broken, kind of thing, because I imagine it's gonna happen, isn't it? People are gonna go more and more, I think.
100%. Yeah, I mean, I think I just hope that it's not any time in the next week or two. I can have at least a month to kind of.
I think you've timed it right. You've probably got to spring now, hopefully.
Yeah. No, there's definitely. I mean, as I've hopefully got across, it wasn't to make a statement about, you know, about it being, you know, it's a phenomenal time that Billy did, and obviously, and Killian's got the record. It's the second fastest. It's by no means the fastest. It's, you know, it's only just under an hour, closer to Killian's time. So Killian's is the record for Burnett, and it's the time to be. It's nice people saying the UK record and the British record, but I don't. don't think I would have come out and said that myself. It's the second fastest time, and like it is what it is. But hopefully, it kind of shows that to the really fast guys, you know, your Cal Bells, your Brendan Townsend, your Finn Wilds.
Yeah.
There's names I've missed, but there'll be loads and loads of people out there that all around the UK scene that could go and lower my time. Flippin' definitely.
Someone like Finley must be rubbing his hands a bit, mustn't he? Now that you've gone out and kind of pushed the barrier a little bit.
Yeah, and he should be. You know, he 14:42 for the solo unsupported is ridiculous. So he should be. Not that you want to put the pressure on him, but
no.
He is of the calibre to be running faster than me.
Definitely. I think from seeing him, I don't think he will mind that bit of pressure, will he? He'll kind of,
it's if he wants to do it solo and support, that's cool. But if he wants a bit of help, then I can point him towards.
You can hang on for leg five again.
yeah, I'll happily do leg five, the glory leg.
Right, I'll leave you in a second. Yeah, I've just got a couple more questions. What is off the Bob Graham now? What is your favourite Martin Cox session? We both share a coach. We've both been with him for like probably equal amount of time, or quite a long time. So, what is your favourite session?
I really like uphill tempo running.
Yeah.
So, like the longer the better. Yeah, I like the 30 minute, 40 minute ones. So we can just about in the lakes, just about get 40 minute uphill tempo. Well, I don't know. To be fair, you probably get an hour, but it wouldn't all be uphill. But yeah, for strict uphill, you can just get good, just hard workouts. So like they're enjoyable at the time. Like you've got a definite finite limit that you've got to reach.
Yeah.
And you just run tempo effort for that time uphill. It's just, I don't know. It's helped me no end in terms of my running. Just that session alone, I think. And I really enjoy it. You know, it's fun at the time in a weird sort of way. And it's type two fun definitely afterwards when you're trotting back down thinking I've earned my chips there or whatever. So
I like them because I'm not a naturally fast runner, so it almost takes that element out of it. I feel fast because I'm working hard going uphill. In reality, I'm not going fast at all. But if I do a tempo session on the flat, then I don't feel fast. I'm just running faster than I normally can.
Does that make sense? Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's just a very honest effort, isn't it? You know, it's like generally with the lakes, they're saying like half an hour will get you to top of most of the fells. Yeah. 40 minutes will definitely get you top of all the fells, pretty much. So it's like, right, from the bottom to the top, off we go, type thing.
Yeah.
And you just get that satisfaction at the end of it that you've worked hard, definitely.
And knowing, like, from the ones that you've done the best at, shall we say, that kind of 30K mark and kind of either hard tempo-ish kind of races, a bit technical, is that what you want to stick at, or did the Bob Graham kind of tempt you into thinking I'm going to go into 100K races or even further?
I don't know. Yeah, I think.
Or has Martin got you to do a road marathon finally or something?
No, we have talked about it. No, I think
he tries to turn everyone into a marathon runner, but he's just ended up with a load of Bob Graham ultra runners.
Pretty much, yeah. Pretty much everyone's done it now. Yeah, I think you're the only one that hasn't, have you?
Yeah, I think so.
you put your finger out. I think 100K. I think maybe next year or the year after might look at something like that. I don't know, I enjoy everything from sort of 20K upwards, really, sort of fell running. And so like the longer classic sort of fell races, Langdale's my favourite fell race. And just those longer sort of European races, around about 30, 35, 40K sort of things are quite, just like being out for 3 or 4 hours or something, that's a decent amount of time. You feel like you're running relatively fast. It's not just a slog for 8, 9, 10 hours. But you can also get stuck into a race as well a bit more, of that sort of 3, 4, 5 hour sort of time difference. But maybe do a 100K.
Personally, I'm with Martin. I'd love to see you run a marathon. I think you'd be great at a marathon. Yeah,
marathon.
Yeah, potential wise. Yeah, you couldn't wear your tights, though.
Yeah.
Right, I'm going to leave you to it, mate. I know you've got the big man's birthday, Paul Tierney's birthday to get to. Thanks for joining me, mate. It's been good to chat.
Thanks for having me on. It's been great. Thanks for showing an interest in it.
First of all, like I know I might mess around a bit on Instagram, but I'm a massive fan of this kind of running stuff. So getting like just using my, leveraging my way into chat here was great. So thanks. Cheers, mate.
Nice one. Cheers, Gary.
There you go. Thanks again to George, and thanks everyone for listening. I will leave you with the news that if you go onto the Run Strong Club website at www.therunstrongclub.com, you can now download the Run Strong MOT for free, which is a series of videos where you can find out your strengths and weaknesses as a runner. There are exercises and tests that have been given to me from physios over the years that will help you reduce the chance of injuries. And there's some bonus videos for returning to running safely after injury too. And you can also now join the Run Strong Club from as little as £20 a month. For those of you that want to be part of the club and have the support, the accountability, the training, the videos, the weekly Q&As, but don't need a bespoke training plan, you can now join the social plan, and that starts at £20. All the info is on the website. Again, thanks for listening. Leave your ratings and reviews on iTunes, Spotify, wherever, and we'll speak to you soon.